The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. "Are you the King of the Jews?" Pilate asked. Jesus replied, "Do you ask this of your own accord, or have others spoken to you about me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? It is your own people and the chief priests who have handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus replied, "Mine is not a kingdom of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my men would have fought to prevent my being surrendered to the Jews. But my kingdom is not of this kind." "So you are a king then," said Pilate. "It is you who say it," answered Jesus. "Yes, I am a king. I was born for this. I came into the world for this, to bear witness to the truth. And all who are on the side of truth, listen to my voice." The Gospel of the Lord. On many occasions in life, we can feel quite powerless, despite being told so often now that we can do this or that. It's so much easier. Like try to change your bank or your power suppliers. We're told it's so much easier. And if it is, why do many of us say, why does life seem to be getting harder? But that powerlessness can spread wider too. Power to the people may be the slogan, but it doesn't seem to work like that, as no doubt you know. We had a school governor's meeting the other evening, and we discovered that many of the powers that we traditionally had and thought we still had, we told were no longer ours. And in a sense, we felt slightly sidelined and powerless. But it can go wider than that, because I think when we're looking at Syria, Iraq, Libya, the last 10, 15 years or more now, more than that, we feel powerless as to what's going on. And of course, Paris and Mali, there's a sense of powerlessness all around. And we're conscious that some decisions may be made long time ago, but not in our name, are a result now of what is happening. Well, all that was spinning around my mind as I was thinking of Christ the King, and how different a notion of kingship that Jesus brings, because kingship is usually linked with power. And so Pilate's question to Jesus, "Are you the King of the Jews?" On Pilate's lips, the question is obviously one of political sense, because he's in political power. And so if this is a king that's challenging him, he wants to know. It's quite interesting that when you see the two of them standing there, of course, always the first station of the cross is Pilate washing his hands, but Pilate there, and I think on the front of the newsletter too, there's a caption to, there you see Jesus, hands bound, seemingly powerless. Pilate, with all the trappings of power and the Roman Empire, and yet, who is in charge? St. John is utterly clear. John's recording of the Passion is different in many ways from that of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. For in John, it is always Jesus who is in charge. If you don't believe me, read the Passion. Because even when they come to arrest him, they say, "We've come for Jesus," and they fall back. He is in charge. But of course, Pilate doesn't see it like that. Except later in the story, when he says to Jesus, "Do you not that I've got power to do?" Jesus said, "You'd have no power were it not given you from above." And where has Jesus come from? But above. So he questions Jesus, and Jesus doesn't give a straight answer, in a sense, because he's saying to Pilate, "Does King of the Jews mean the same for you as it does for the Jews who have delivered me up?" Because, you see, Pilate's a Roman official. He represents political power, and he's could be threatened by rebellion if this is a new king. And that's why later on, in that same gospel, the Jews say, "We have no king but Caesar." Because he says, here is your king. No. We've not got a king but Caesar. Can you say it at some point? And yet Jesus is still in charge. So he says to Pilate quite clearly, "My kingship is not of this world. It's a different sort of kingship." And if it's a yes in a no to Pilate's question. Yes, I am a king, but no, not in the way that's threatening you or you're worried about. And yet, people do worry when we think of Christ as our king. That's why the feast was instituted only as short time ago as 1925 by Pope Pius XI, because he saw the rise of secularism, Nazism, communism, all of which resented the authority of Christ and still do. If you don't believe me, just try to be a Christian openly in Korea, particularly North Korea, many other places in the world where we are most persecuted. And in a sense, it's Jesus who is our king. And they, for some reason or other, feel it a threat. But Jesus turns kingship on its head because it says he came to seek and to save those that were lost. The Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And so we are the servants who say Christ is our King. Pope Francis in particular, but other popes through the history, have always tried to recall the church back to that of the servant of the poor in every sense. As just as the popes are servants of the servants of God, so we are servants to the world. And speaking about 12 days ago in the cathedral in Florence, where Pope Francis was addressing the National Convention of the Italian Church, he began like this. Under the dome in Florence, though you've been in that magnificent cathedral, this huge dome. But he says, pointing to it, "The Last Judgment is pictured in the dome of this most beautiful cathedral. And at its center is Jesus, our light. We're drawn upward," he says, "as we contemplate the transformation of Christ, judged by Pilate, into Christ seated on the judge's throne. And an angel brings him the sword, yet Jesus doesn't take that, but raises his right hand, and as his right hand is raised, showing the marks of the passion." And Pope Francis went on, "In the light of this merciful judge and our king, our knees bend in adoration, and our hands and our feet are strengthened." That's a recognition of that prayer of St. Teresa, who said, "Christ has no body now on earth but yours. Yours are the hands, yours are the feet, yours are the lips, yours are the ears, yours are the mouth, to proclaim the king, the kingship of Christ." And he went on to pick on three words that he unpacked at length. I will only mention and not even unpack: humility, disinterest in self, which, as I'm ever reminding you, is always the I crossed out. That's what Jesus did. Not me, but he was preaching, of course, the Father himself. And beatitude, the other word. Humility, selflessness, really, and beatitude. And he said, these traits tell us that we cannot be obsessed with power in any sort of worldly way. So that when the Lord comes in glory, as we sang in our opening hymn, he will come as king, but he first came in humility, born in the stable, riding on the donkey, dying on the cross, that he did for us. And all he's saying is that we are servants of his, servants of the truth of Jesus, the truth we know in him. Grace and truth, said John, come through Jesus, the Word made flesh of the Father. And while we're here, our task is to bring in that kingdom for which he taught us to pray for the coming of his kingdom. And doing that by our humility, by our, often when I say beatitudes, I often say to you, those beautiful attitudes, they weren't represented in Paris. It wasn't beautiful attitudes that were at Marc in Mali. It isn't beautiful attitudes many times around us. But that's what we bring through Jesus, because he's king of our hearts. And that's why we begin each Mass looking into our hearts. What's in there? What's been going on? Then when we've discovered it and acknowledged it and confessed it, we can go on to celebrate, as we do in every Mass, the King of Love on Calvary.